Welcome back to After the Buzzer. I am Gordy Jones, and joining me, as always, from Gross Estates in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, is that Mike Gross. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Gordy. We are thinking about an official change, name change to Gross Estates. So I'm glad you brought that up.
As you should. And joining us on the phone line is longtime Delaware County Daily Times columnist Jack McCaffrey. Hello, Jack.
Hi, Gordy. Hi, Mike.
How's it going?
Good.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about the 76ers, since Jack has been a longtime chronicler of their adventures and misadventures. Jack, what do we make of this team at this point? As we sit here, they are 47-21, three games up as the number one seed in the East with, let's see, with four to play. So it looks like they're going to get the top seed. How good is this team in your estimation?
That's a great question, because they are going to get that top seed. And I spoke to Doc around about that the other day. What are we to make of that season? It was a strange season, 72 games, a lot of guys missing time. Through failed virus tests and things like that, teams weren't full on many nights, and especially during this eight-game winning streak, the quality of the opposition has been very, very poor. So it's very difficult to tell where they are right now. My gut feeling, to answer your question, is that it revealed enough over 72 games to say, you know what, they're about where they belong. They've earned it. They've earned it to get to this point. They're going to have that home court advantage through the playoffs, the one that Brett Brown wanted so badly to achieve, and now it looks like they're going to get it. And they're a very good home team. They play very well at home. They're going to get stuff out.
I thought it was coming down the stretch here, Jack. I thought it was kind of important that they get the number one seed, because I'm looking ahead and I'm thinking it's going to be a lot harder to beat both Milwaukee and Brooklyn than to beat just one of them. I mean, that's sort of an obvious thing there. It didn't seem to me like Doc was prioritizing the number one seed that much, at least in terms of what he was saying to us. So I think it's a big deal. I think it's really important.
Absolutely, and that's for exactly that reason. You don't have to play both of those teams.
Yeah.
And it's big. My guess is that Doc prioritized it more than he let on.
Yeah,
certainly. He's played Joel all of these last eight games, including a back to back. We know that has a lot to do with Joel being MVP, because you really want to play in those 70% of the games in order to be listed among the league leaders. I'm firmly convinced it has something to do with that. But to play him on the back to back games told you that he's serious. He wants to get this done. He wants that number one seed.
Would you vote for Embiid for MVP? I don't know. Maybe you have a vote. I don't know. Would you vote for him?
I don't. I don't have a vote. I've never had a vote. Gordy, have you ever had a vote?
I have never had a vote, no.
Yeah. I would vote for Steph Curry, and I'll tell you what, it's very close. It's one of the closest races, one of the most crowded races we've seen. There are at least four really strong candidates. I would like to see Chris Paul get it. He's been tremendous. Jokic is going to get it, because if you look at the betting lines, let's just be real about this. The betting lines are overwhelming, overwhelming Jokic. Mm-hmm. So, and those guys don't get it wrong that badly. It's probably going to be him, but I would vote for Steph Curry. But I wouldn't dispute either Jokic, Embiid, Curry, or who am I forgetting? Chris Paul. One of those four.
Yeah, that's good. Those are four good times. I mean, the way I look at it, Jack, I mean, as you mentioned, Jokic is the guy that looks like he's going to get it. But to me, he may be a better, a more well-rounded offensive player than Joel. But Joel, at the other end, is far superior to Jokic, in my estimation. Where do you stand on that?
In the tiebreaker, it's going to be he didn't play enough games.
Right.
That's going to come back and bite him. And it was interesting, because even Doc, who obviously was going to throw his support behind Embiid, and he did. Mm-hmm. He said, "But if not for Embiid, that would go with Jokic." So it tells you that he has great respect for Jokic, and that's the way it's going to go. But the tiebreaker to me is he plays more often. And if Joel Embiid gets punished for playing fewer games, well, I'm not going to hold his hand. It's he's been an injury prone or a rest prone player for 7 years, and sometimes you might have to pay a price for that. This might be something where he has to pay. He's going to pay dearly because, you know, Gordy, you know, Joel, how badly he wants that. He wants that in the worst way. Mm-hmm. Doesn't look like he's going to get it, and maybe he'll realize. I mean, he all of a sudden, in these last 10 games, he demands to play all of them. That was a little too late, and it's going to cost him.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. What do you think, Jack? What do you think, Doc? You've got a lot of room to roam on this question. What do you think Doc has done for them? What do you think he's changed?
Number one, Doc is well-renowned in that industry for being as prepared as anybody with the scouting report of what the other team is going to do. As you guys know, we're not allowed into the morning shoot-arounds, but from what we're told, they are very, very detailed, accurate, and spot-on. So then when you get to game night, there's nothing that the opposition is trying or going to do that Doc doesn't know. Obviously, you're talking about the top 30 coaches in the profession. They're all good at it, but Doc is the best from what we understand. That's one. Two, he lent a new voice. Now, that was going to be accurate to everybody. Now, I can't speak for you guys, but I think Gordy, we all respected Brett and what he did. I said Brett had the toughest coaching job in the history of sports. Mm-hmm. That was just unbelievable. Between the process and Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid, and it was just the gypsy point guards and the Colangelo's burner account. You talk about just a difficult job. At the end, his voice was falling flat.
Yeah.
And that can happen.
Yeah.
So Doc not only brought a new voice, he brought a voice that's respected and has won a championship. And the third thing to answer your question is he got players to accept roles that it's not always easy at that level. Now, his second team has a couple of young players on it, but he got Dwight Howard to really buy in as a backup center to not even start him on nights that Joel wasn't playing. There's a science to that, and Doc's got down to that. So I'd say all three of those things, his preparedness, his ability to lend a new voice, and with that to get his players to play hard, and then his touch with getting players to accept roles, all of that contributed to what he's been able to achieve.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially about Brett Brown. It's after the length of time he was here, it was time for a new voice. I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think very highly of him. I think he was a good man, but it was time. I think he knew it was time, too.
Yeah, he did, and he sat out the year. He's very good at going underground, as you know. Nobody's heard hiding or hair of him, but he'll get another opportunity. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts to star in the next coaching recycling spin.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I think that's pretty... So what should Sixer fans be most concerned about heading into the playoffs in your estimation?
The second team's not playing real well lately. And one thing that Doc relied on or really built his plan on for this year is to, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but almost having two hockey shifts.
Mm-hmm.
A first unit and a very distinct second unit. And for a while that was the last few games against some bad teams. He's had to run that starting unit back in there in the fourth quarter because that second unit just isn't making it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons is Shake Milton's not playing well. Mike, for the life of me, I don't understand why they can't elevate Tyrese Maxey above Shake Milton. That could help, but yeah, the one thing I would be concerned about is that second unit is not playing like they expected it to.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hopeful that it would. And it has played well at times. But, well, of course, Miles has been injured. There's been a lot of reasons for it. But, yeah, that would be my answer. The second unit's not playing up to championship level like they had hoped.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me there was a point early in the year I was impressed with how much Maxey was playing. And I don't, you know, maybe I'm off on this, but that's just how it seemed to me. I was impressed with him and with how much he was playing. And then there seemed to be a point where it was more of a Korkmaz thing and less Maxey. And I just don't understand why he's not playing more. I like him.
That's a great question because we get there early, as you guys know, and Tyrese is always out on the court early, working on his game. Yeah. He's not the world's greatest shooter. Doc has really stressed in recent weeks. He's take the direct line to the basket. He is a get to the basket guy. Yeah. He can do that. He's shooting a little better. And Shake Milton is just flattening out again. And he wasn't great in the playoffs last year either. So this is Doc keeps saying now that he's not going to hesitate to go to an 11-man rotation in the playoffs. The implication being Maxey's the 11th. Maybe Milton's the 11th. To me, and they're not asking me, but if it was me, trust your eyes. I mean, look at what you drafted the guy in the first round for a reason, and you were right. Trust your eyes. I understand he's only 20 years old, but he is a special talent, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
Yeah, and Doc certainly knows that the playoffs are different and veteran tricks that he'll see that maybe he didn't see in the regular season. I'd give him a chance with that second unit.
Yeah, I think he's got something. He's got it's the old Pete Carril line about how you walk into a gym and certain players are real light bulbs, and he fits that description. He just kind of lights up the gym. You can just tell that he's got something that maybe other guys don't have, a certain energy about him. I think that's how I would read him at this point.
I don't see that he hurts them defensively. Maybe that's it, but I don't see that.
No.
I mean, not any worse than Shake, and that's a better offensive player.
But
that's not going to really tilt the scales so much. But to me, it would change that second unit. It would elevate that second unit, and it's certainly worth looking at least early in the playoffs. And if you get early, if Tyrese Maxey can get you through the early rounds of the playoffs, then by the second or third round of the playoffs, he's not a rookie anymore.
So those
are a couple things that I'd be concerned about. I mean, and obviously the one thing you're really concerned about is what are they going to do defensively against Simmons in the playoffs if he doesn't really help you. I mean, we've seen what happens there over the years. But Doc's done a good job of getting him the ball down low. So,
What's your impression of Dwight Howard? He's had this interesting sort of second act to his career where he always seemed a little goofy, but now he seems like goofy in a more way. And he's really a team guy. I don't know. You're obviously around it a lot more than I am. What's your sense of what kind of a guy that is with Howard?
I wish we could get into the locker room. We haven't been able to do that this year. But from what I can hear and what you can see when the opportunities we do get, which is on Zooms and things like that, and also listening to Doc and some people commenting on Dwight, the sense that I get to answer your question directly is that he's aware that the end is near for him. And of course, he won a championship last year. There's nothing more from the Chief. The guy's going to go to the Hall of Fame. He might finish in the top 10 all-time rebounders. He's been an NBA champion. But the end is near. He sees it. And I get the real, real sense that he's, I shouldn't say melancholy, maybe a little nostalgic, aware that, boy, this has been a great run. I'm not saying this is his last year. Play the way he rebounds, he's still going to get a job if he needs one. My answer is yes. If he was a little bit different as a young man, he's much more appreciative of what he's been able to have, and he's aware of that now, and he's doing a really good job of passing that along to the younger players. And that was, if you wanted to say anything that surprised me about the Sixers this year, it was how Dwight Howard, his maturity level. I really didn't know. I can't pretend that I know him. But see what we've seen this year. His maturity level has been off the charts and almost like another coach, and very, very helpful to Doc Rivers.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow.
So you mentioned the second unit. I wonder how that second unit might look if it had any one of these three players: Mikal Bridges, Jeremy Grant, or Christian Wood. You ever given
that? Wow. Well, if it was Bridges, then he wouldn't be on a second unit. I think they find a play from on a first unit somewhere.
I'm thinking maybe.
We could talk about you've written a book on Sixers history with the players that maybe they let go too soon.
Yeah.
Quite a number of those, and it was different. Don't worry, you've given me a column idea. I'll tell you that.
Good. I'm glad.
I got that in the back of my mind. Now you said it out loud. I can use it.
That's right.
Yeah, that's clearly legitimate. That's the rule.
That is actually Jack's long-standing rule.
Said it out loud. You got it. But no, that's a great point, Gordy. Go back and audit what could have been. Bridges was obviously a huge mistake.
Dear God.
They traded him for Zaire Smith, is that right? Am I right there?
Yeah, they traded him for
bad mistake.
Yeah, big time. I mean, that's not even a second guess. I wrote that at the time. It's like, what are they doing?
Nailed it, man. Nailed it.
Yeah. It's like... But which brings me into my other point, speaking of columnizing, that you have you've been very clear about your feelings about the process over the years. I wonder if you could just outline for our vast listening audience what your view is on that.
Well, my fundamental baseline view is the best phrase when I called up Pat Croce and asked him what he thought of it. Mm-hmm. And he screamed into the phone, "Lose on purpose? No way!" So, lose on purpose is not something I would ever recommend. And to go further, it didn't take any skill. It didn't take any basketball knowledge. It didn't take any courage. It took Sam Hinkie to try to plot numbers and come up with it. If I do A plus B, it will equal C. And that's not the way sports happens. It's probably an argument that's been batted around enough. Where I would say that at some point, the one thing I think we all agreed on at the time was there will be an answer. We will find out whether it works. And this is what I wrote it early in the process, and I still feel it now. And again, you're going to accuse me of putting an equation together, but I'll put an equation together. I thought that in order to justify that surrender of professionalism, the Sixers were going to have to go to the NBA Final Four at least four times in a five-year period, mm-hmm. and they were going to have to go to the championship round at least one of those times. And I never demanded a championship, because I always said that you have to make a foul shot, you have to get a referee's call, you have to get healthy. Mm-hmm. There could be a million reasons why you don't actually win the darn thing at the end. But in order to justify five years of a process, you really had to give me, five final 4 years at the other end. And they got a heck of a shot to get one this year. To me, that would be a reasonable payoff for that. And guess what? They haven't gotten close to it yet.
No, they've not.
Jack, there's sort of a hinky mafia out there. What has the readership reaction been to your take on that?
Mostly supportive. Mostly supportive. The readership in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, kind of was in agreement that losing is not a good thing, and it's kind of a topic that's now at the point where, okay, this is it. This is where you dump games to get to Joel Embiid, you got him. You dump games to get to Okafor. We saw him the other night. Boy, what? Anyway, you dump games to get to Simmons, you got him. You've got a number one seed in the tournament here. Get to the Final Four. See what happens. Maybe then give me four in the next 5 years, another three or four times at it. I'll give you 1 year that you throw in a clunker where there's injuries and some other things. I don't think I'm being unreasonable.
No. Oh, I don't either. I mean,
you surrendered all of your professional dignity. You really did. Like I just can't imagine doing that. Okay, well then, you know, give me the payoff at the other end, and we haven't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's too many variables. Like you said, Okafor. Even though they got him number three. Corey, you know, they dumped that season in the course of that season, Okafor was supposed to be number one. Mm-hmm. Now, at the end, he kind of dipped it to the very last click, as they say, at the racetrack. He clicked down to number three. But that was the point. They wanted that guy. And how wrong could they be?
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. And there's a book out there by Jake Fisher where he said what lengths Porzingis went to not work out for the Sixers because he was the next
best. Yeah. Boy. But big sports is that way. Rosters, people make mistakes. They make some good moves too, I suppose. Tobias Harris has turned out to be at least as good or better than you thought he was going to be. Mm-hmm. And, there's been good and the bad. This is what you've got. Go for it.
Yeah, but I wonder about him in the playoffs too, Jack. I mean, he hasn't done it. He hasn't done it in the postseason either. So I wonder about him. Do you share those concerns?
To the extent, as you put it, you know, if you're looking at the past performances, he hasn't done it. You're absolutely right. Certainly, Doc has gotten the most out of him.
Yeah,
Doc got the most out of him early, and I think a lot of it was to do with spreading out the last second shot responsibilities.
Right.
For years, it was Brett would say, we're going to go to our crown jewel. We're going to go to every coach in the league had to know in that last play, they were going to go to Joel Embiid. He was going to put it on the floor and turn it over. That's what was going to happen. So they finally stopped doing that. And then, of course, when Jimmy Butler was there for the 5 minutes he was there, well, nobody else was going to take the last shot with him. But now those responsibilities have been spread around. And Tobias is absolutely, if he's not one, he's two. It's Joel and him, 1-2. And he's kept him as pretty much in that four spot all year. Mm. He hasn't changed his position much.
No.
He had great success with Tobias when he was with the Slippers.
Yep, he did.
It's been a real nice marriage with Harris and Doc Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. I think he's really unlocked him. And you're right about playing that four spot. I think there's so many times when he has a mismatch, just an athleticism and skill mismatch, it seems like to me. I agree with that 100%.
He's killer instinct, too. Killer gets to the basket, makes a big shot. But you said, Gordy, you're right. In the playoffs, he misses those shots. It's unreasonable for us to say that, but facts are facts.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and it's. You're absolutely right. Yeah, so. And you mentioned Jimmy Butler. As it stands now, the Heat is tied with Atlanta for fifth. So it's potentially the Sixers might see the Heat, which I think the Sixers are a better team, but you know, I think the Heat could push them a little bit because of Jimmy, because of guys like Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo, guys like that. So I don't know. That's a potentially tricky matchup for them.
Well said. Perfect word for it. And we know Spoelstra can coach. He's not good. You're not going to outcoach the guy. So if you have a strength with Doc Rivers, you're not going to have that strength in that particular matchup.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and Jimmy Butler makes big shots, and boy, would he love to beat the Sixers in that situation. So it's going to be fun. It'll be a really good Eastern Conference tournament.
I think so. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. Jack, I wonder if you could address the fact that from where I sit, at least, and I haven't been there this year, but I know in the past couple years, there's certainly, in my estimation, kind of a different vibe about how the team is covered as opposed to, you know, and I'm going to sound really old now, as opposed to how it was in the old days. And how would you describe that? Is that accurate from where you sit?
Okay, well, were we talking literally? Because literally we were covering it now through these Zoom calls,
yeah,
as opposed to actually getting to speak to the guys one-on-one. But I think you're talking about more, and this is, boy, what a good topic, Gordy. even in the last two or three years where we were allowed to get close to people,
yeah.
Me, personally, I found it, and I don't want to criticize other people by name, and I won't go by name,
right.
I put it at longer than Joe DiMaggio's streak. I had it at 56 straight games. Yeah. Somebody asked Brett Brown about the pick and roll. It's like, spoiler alert, okay? In the NBA, they're going to run a pick and roll. For some reason, these younger reporters were fixated on that, where it got to be every other part. And then it got to be more technical and more technical, and you would always hear Brett say something to the effect of, well, I could get into real coach speak with you if you really want to.
Yeah.
I remember I'm going to finish my point soon, but I remember one guy decided to engage, I don't even remember, I'm serious, I don't remember, engage Brett in heavy duty inside basketball talk. Brett came out with what sounded like a scientist. He lost me three syllables into what he said. Come this way, back that way, cut this way, something, and he's coming in his direction, saying, roll with pickers. The guy stood there like, all right, you know, I'm out of my league. I mean, he'd have been better off trying to, you know, challenge Herb McGee to a foul shooting contest. You're not going to engage an NBA coach. So interesting enough, I've seen less and less of that this year. Everybody can, there's more than one way to do this job. People do it their way. I always kind of kept my questions to who's injured, who's playing, why is he playing, why is he not playing, why are you playing this guy? Maybe why did you go to that particular play late in a game? Then beyond that, you ask, you know, maybe something about the guy's background, where in college, high school, maybe you get a little story that way, a story idea breaks in your mind, and you get to tell a little tale. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's where you were headed, Corey, but I thought that in the last 5 years, the technical coverage of the sport has gone over the top to the point where I don't know who would read it. I don't know where I would wake up in the morning and say, boy, I really want to read, you know, the mechanics of pick and roll.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I'd
love to hear your opinion.
It's a little bit, maybe extreme is the wrong word, but maybe the questioner is trying to show how much they know. I don't know.
That's smarter. You know what, though, guys? There are a few people, national people, who I think really do that well.
Yes.
I think Zach Lowe really does that
yes,
well.
Yes, he does.
For example.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're kind of imitating those couple guys.
Mm-hmm.
But Zach Lowe's doing these big pieces on ESPN's website where he's using video. And, you know, that's a little different than your job or than a regular beat guy for a team's job. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think there are people doing that really well,
mm-hmm.
but I hear you.
That's what I said. There's more than one way to do this job. They do it their way, and they're very successful at it. I'm just trying to answer the question of what I see different. Mm-hmm. I see that more and more. Yes. I don't ever remember sitting down with Billy Cunningham and talking that heavily. You know, Max gets grieved tonight. You know,
I'm thinking Billy's not going to go there. No, just as an aside, a couple years ago when Brett was still coaching the team, I was writing something about Covington and what a good defender he was. Of course, the story is in the process of immolating because Devin Booker lit him up for like 46 one
night. Ancient columnist law, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so I'm asking him just something about that game, and I said something, well, Brett, I saw that he got beaten back door earlier, and then you benched him. He goes, he got beaten twice. So he like shut me down like right
away. You were right. You nailed it. Brett was great. Brett would engage you in hardcore basketball talk if that's what you wanted to do. Maybe I just didn't have the energy to worry about that too much. Maybe I should have. I don't know.
It's a whole different, I don't know. It's like you said, everybody approaches it in a different way. That's different. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
So,
Jack, I admire the fact that you've just been a columnist for so long, and that has changed. being a columnist has changed. And I've been reading some things lately prompted by the retirement of Tom Boswell that have talked about how it's not what it used to be. Do you still have the connection with the readers? What's it like being a sports columnist in this day and age?
You know, it's at our particular newspaper, the Daily Times, it's almost two different, columnist is almost two different jobs. I'd say like 85 to 90% of what I do is at Broad and Patterson, or, you know, Voorhees or Camden, wherever their teams are. And then the other 10 to 15%, I will do something maybe Delaware County related with schools, high schools, or people, or old-timers. And then that's where you get a great connection, really, with the readers. They embrace you. They want to help you. They want their story told. And about a year ago, obviously, we all went through a situation where there was no sports at all. Yeah. So we, as you know, the newspaper's coming out anyway. So something has to be on those pages. And that's why I spent a lot of time calling up old coaches and old players and current players and coaches. And you got great interaction with readers with the hyper-local stuff. Now that, we have writers at the Daily Times. That's their job. I kind of, you know, helicopter in if a team's in the state finals or something major.
Oh, yeah, that's good. I would like that, yeah.
Yeah, but my job is as covering the Sixers, mostly Sixers and Phillies, and you'll get people that'll swipe at you on an email or something, or agree with you and say, hey, that was a good point or something like that. But not. I wouldn't say overwhelming engagement. Maybe I'm not real social myself, so maybe I don't get back to them quick enough. Now I think of it, I think it's me.
That can't be it. So how have you found it to be to cover these teams in a pandemic? As you mentioned, it's so much of it is Zoom and you can't get in the locker room, et cetera, et cetera. What has it been like for you?
It's been a little bit of a change. I'm going to surprise you, and I'm not going to go to war over we have to be in the locker room.
Okay.
I think that's how actors played out, standing around a locker room waiting for a guy to finish a shower or whatever. I'd like to get in the locker room for baseball more often. I'd like to hope to get back into there, because you really, even standing around a locker room, you hear things and you pick up little notes and maybe you get to know a player and get a little conversation going.
Right.
You eavesdrop on the coach's office, you know, that kind of thing, to the point where we're allowed. Nobody's going past any lines, but you're just not eavesdropping, but you're, hey, look at this guy. He's on, yeah, so, and then you put it in the back of your mind and later on.
Right.
I was thinking about this tonight. It's now that we're doing almost exclusively on Zoom, and that would be at the major league level, the high school level, you still get to see the kids up close. But the major league level, you're seeing it all on the Zoom. You don't get much of a chance to ask follow-up questions. Maybe you get two. So then you better get your story in those two questions.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing, and this is, you might want to throw me into it, but I see industry-wide, on the same topic I just brought up about the newspaper is going to come out anyway, and that space is going to be filled. Same thing with the cyberspace, the websites. There's a certain amount of stories are going to be written. X number of stories are going to be written. If those stories aren't happy, good features of, you know, stories, then what's the risk to the team? The risk to the team is that same spot is going to be filled up with what you might call on the electronic media side, clickbait, or on the print side, headline searching things like Carson Wentz must go, because if you're looking at that, if you're a columnist, you're looking at that site, that place is going to be filled.
Right.
You weren't allowed to get down there and walk around and hear why Carson Wentz doesn't have to go.
Right.
So therefore, you are. It becomes much more polar and much more aggressive, and at least there's also some positive polar. Joel Embiid's the best player ever. But, so there's that, and then there's, but it's much more polar, and it's clickbait, and it's, I don't think it's great for the teams, and it may have backfired on them more than they think, because they're just, okay, use me. All right, I got a column I got to write. Well, I'm in a miserable mood that day, and I wasn't in there to see, I wasn't allowed in to see why something happened. Then I'm going to write, Hector Harris can't pitch. That's what I wrote today. So, if I'm a PR staff, I'm looking at, there's X number of stories. How many of those are going to be negative because we didn't give these guys and women a chance to come down and be positive? I don't do it deliberately. I don't think anybody else does it deliberately. It's just the nature of the ebb and flow of that space versus obligation to fill it dynamic. Yeah. It's going to be polar, and I think that's where it's going. And fortunately, I work for an organization that doesn't badger me about hits or clicks or subscriptions or anything like that. They allow us to. It's always been my opinion that just do the job, be a newspaper, and do it. And even when I say newspaper, be a newspaper or be a newspaper website and provide good, substantial copy on a daily basis. And at the end, it'll work out whether or not I get 1,000 clicks today or 2 clicks tomorrow. Over the course of, if you do it the right way over the course of a year, you should get as much out of it, at least I hope. I'm fortunate that Rob Parent's our sports editor, Joe Hart's our editor. They don't badger me at all about clicks, which is, from what I understand, is not necessarily the case everywhere.
Yeah, it's not. It sure isn't. How often, how many times a week do you write, John?
I write 5 days a week, and I always have. Oh, you know, we're a union job, and it's what it is. We work those 5 days, and what we've done in recent years is we've stopped writing game stories and allowed that to be picked up by the AP. But then we get to go there, and again, in years past where you would have been writing a game story, now you're writing quote unquote an analysis. So now you got the package. You guys are newspaper men. You got the AP game story. Yeah. You've got my analysis or column, and then I'll also do a notes piece: who's injured, who's saying why, who's complaining, whatever. So that becomes the package. So that's how we do it. And you see a lot of people. The game story in a lot of ways is obsolete.
Yeah. It's interesting though that I know a lot of people. Well, as you know, a lot of people in our business are worried that when we in the post-pandemic era, these teams are still going to be in love with Zoom and are still going to kind of keep us out of the locker room, and that might be going away for good. And you're making a point, and the more you say it, the more you're convinced me that you might be right, that may not be in the team's best interest. That's interesting.
I've heard a couple of spins on that, Mike, and the one is obviously the players are in favor of this. They love this. Love it. The PR staffs, from what I can gather, are not quite as in love with it as you might think they are. In fact, one guy told me, he says, let me tell you, it's better for us if you just let you guys go in there and do it yourself. Because what they found that they're now finding is, who do you think has to go into those locker rooms and drag those guys out to the Zoom interviews? Yeah. It's them. And you know, I'm sure that they don't get a hard time, because I can't complain. Pretty much everybody we've needed to get, we've gotten. I'd like to see the Sixers provide more starters after the morning shoot around, but that's, now I'm getting, you know, off the beat. But the one thing I think is encouraging, Mike, is I've heard some whispers among PR staffs that it's not as blissful as they might have anticipated. Yeah. That maybe it's better off that we just go let these pains in the neck come in for an hour, do it themselves, come out of here.
Yeah, that actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Jack, how many years in are you now?
Well, I started at the Philadelphia Journal, and that was very young. Obviously, I mean, I was 21. Philadelphia Journal was as kind of a sports oriented, a little more, and people don't remember, it's a little bit like the New York Post, something like that. And that was in Philadelphia. Did 4 years of that from 77 on. So if you have a high-speed computer up there, you can calculate 1977 to 21. That's 43. That's a 41 and then 44 years.
Yeah.
44 years.
So, Jack, one of the things I've always admired about you is you definitely have an enthusiasm for the job that you bring every time I see you. And I just wonder, A, how you maintain that, and B, how much longer you picture yourself doing it?
I'll do it as long as they'll have me, Gordy. That's a great question. I'm very lucky. I've had so many friends in the business that weren't quite as lucky as me. And I'm very there's not a day goes by that I don't say, how lucky am I, really, with layoffs and furloughs and all of the newspapers. Of course, I did work for two newspapers that went out of business within 28 days of each other. Three, actually, if you want to hear the real story. But Philadelphia Journal went out of business, and I went across the street to the Bulletin, where I had done some work before that earlier. And Bob Wright was the sports editor there. He said, I knew you'd be in. I said, so what do you got? He was a very good guy. He says, I got nothing. He says, we're in bad shape. He gave me some indoor soccer, and I think it was Penn basketball or something, one of those Big Five teams. So I did that for literally 28 days, and then they went out. They went out 28 days later.
Wow.
And then our good friend, I think you guys might know Art Wolf at Montgomery Newspapers, I went back to work for him in Montgomery County. Maybe you don't know Art was, voice of the Phillies, and you remember Art Wolf from KYW, Gordy.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was the sports editor up there, and they had a daily newspaper. It was called Today's Post, and then I went out of business, and then we were just down to some weeklies. So I took my hits early, but boy, have I been blessed late in my career. Really, I have, at a time when it hasn't been easy. So very thankful. So that would answer your question. I appreciate the compliment that I keep my spirits high, and I think it's because when I get in the car to go to the game, I still say to myself, boy, aren't I lucky to be able to do this.
That's great.
Yeah, I do too. I still feel that way. Yeah, you're right.
So just one thing off the beaten path, Jack, to our listeners, Jack's brother Fran coaches the Iowa men's basketball team, and Luca Garza was the Big Ten Player of the Year. And how do you foresee him as an NBA player, Jack?
Absolutely an NBA player. He could have been an NBA player last year. They're worried about his ability to get out and guard four men. You know, it's positionless defense now, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's really an old-fashioned five man.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit like Okafor in a lot of ways.
Right.
Really, really good around the basket. Just amazing around the basket. And I'm looking at Jahlil Okafor. Don't shed any tears for him. He's had himself a nice livelihood for a number of years now. So I think what you'll see is Luka Garza, and I'm not just saying this because I'm rooting for Luka Garza. I know for a fact that he can have opportunities in the NBA, either drafted or to get paid as an undrafted player. So he's going to get paid to play in the NBA next year. And back up, I'd say, at first, and then when he gets there, his work ethic is off the charts. And it's my firm belief that he'll impress a coach to be able to win himself some playing time. He can hit threes. He can hit the threes. He can rebound. He's a tremendous team player. You don't need problems. He's a zero problem guy, and he's big and he can shoot. And he will be on an NBA roster next year. He's not going to be competing for the All-Star team, but he's going to be. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a nice 5 to 10 year NBA career.
Oh, that'll work. That'll work.
That sounds about right. He's a great college player, man.
Yeah, he really is.
Two-time National Player of the Year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, really impressive. Yeah.
So, Jack, if you had to put a percentage on it, what percent do you think the Sixers have of winning it this year, winning the championship?
I'll just go right to my point that I went earlier, Final Four, 25%. I think they're going to be in that Final Four, and they're going to be one of those teams. And who's injured at that time?
Right.
Who are the Nets going to throw out there? Mm-hmm. What kind of mood is Kyrie Irving going to be in on that particular day? You know? So I'll tell you this, You know what? I'm going to go 30% because guess what? They're going to have that seventh game at home, and they are a tough out at the Wells Fargo Center. Let me tell you that.
That's true.
Well, so I'll go above 35%. How's that?
Okay.
Oh, 35.
Look at that.
Do I hear 36?
Sounds like an option.
I thought it was going to be 23.0, but we'll go with 36.
Nice round figures.
Well, Jack, thanks so much for the time, and hopefully our paths will cross again soon. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope to see you again soon, Gordy. And Mike, it was great. It was a really pleasure talking with you guys.
All right.
Anytime.
All right, be well, Jack.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
So, Mike, as always, I will ask you what stuck with you about our conversation with our guest, Jack McCaffrey, the longtime columnist at the Delaware County Daily Times.
Well, a couple things. One, I would defend the process a little more than Jack would.
Yeah.
I disagree with him a little bit about that. The idea that you're compromising the professionalism, I think, There's nothing in the world more irrelevant than a 35-win NBA team.
Oh, dear God. You're right about that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So you could be the Atlanta, you could tank for 5 years, or you can be the Atlanta Hawks for 15 years. I mean, either way, you're not winning the championship doing it the Atlanta Hawks way. I don't know. I feel like the process was more defensible, just in the sense that everybody understands that it's in the service of eventually having a chance to win the championship, and you can't fool people in the NBA. You've got to have great players to win it in the NBA. I just think it's different than the other sports. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you have to have almost historically great players to have a chance. And how are you going to get them? How are you going to get them if you're a 35-win team? How are you going to get them if you're an 8 seed? I mean, so I would defend. I would defend with all due respect to Jack. I thought he was great. Great talking to him. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, indeed. He's always a great guy, and I meant that sincerely by what I said. He is always ready to rock whenever he walks in the arena. He's always got something that's either stuck in his craw or something that he's really. I've always liked, it's a good day when I cross paths with him. It really is.
Yeah,
it really
he's
is.
Columnist in his DNA. And the other thing I thought was interesting is this idea that it might not be in the best interest of the teams to access or kind of make that a permanent thing. The more he talked about that, the more I kind of thought that made sense. And I have heard a little bit of that the PR staffs of these teams are not thrilled about, having, like, they have to go in the locker room now and dig these guys out. And that may, I don't know. That may be a factor. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I think some of it will stay, though. I really do. I just think that, they probably like keeping people a little more at arm's length. I think generally speaking, that's a pretty good business plan,
Yeah, and the PR people probably don't have a lot of pull.
Well, this is true. This is true.
Yeah, I'm sure the ownership and management don't care that much about how they feel about it. But, so anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in kind of the future of sports writing kind of thing. It was great. It was great to talk to him.
He's another wonderful
guest.
Yeah, indeed. He's such a good guy, and he cares deeply about what he does, and he is, as you mentioned, really a columnist through and through. He's always got a take on what's going on out there.
Yeah, and that's a really good gig. I mean, it's not he's in the Philadelphia market, but it's a smaller paper. It's I don't know how much smaller it is now. Who knows? I mean, as far as circuit. Anyway, he was great.
So we'll move on to other topics, and you and I both wrote about Aaron Rodgers this week, and that continuing saga, which promises to be with us for the next several weeks, because if the Packers should trade him, the smart money is that they will wait until after June 1st because they won't take as much of a salary cap hit. And right. Today it emerged as Denver is a possibility, and Las Vegas and San Francisco have also been mentioned. I would think that if they are in fact going to trade him, that it would be out of the conference, but that would be the smart thing to do. And so, Mike, where do you stand on this? I mean, we both kind of went at it from a little different angle, but I thought it was, that you could hold the prism up any way you want in a situation like this and see something a little different.
Well, I just, there's so many times in the endless churn of cakes and analysis in sports that is constantly going on mm-hmm. all the time. There's so many times when I think my reaction to what somebody says is, are you aware that half the participants in every game that gets played lose? Are you aware of that? And kind of the corollary to that is, are you aware that only one team wins the last game of the year? Do you not understand that? I just can't believe that this team went to, last year I could understand him being mad because they drafted a quarterback.
Yeah.
I could say, and according to him, according to Aaron Rodgers, that was a great motivator for him and maybe was part of the reason that he played some of the best football of his career last season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you go 13-3 and you go to the NFC Championship game And again, he is saying, as I wrote, he's saying to his teammates, I'm good enough, you guys aren't.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way, and I've heard people say, well, him and his agent are cooking something up here. There's something going on here. He's got some motivation for this. Well, maybe he does, but there's no way around the fact that to the extent he's publicly throwing his teammates under the bus, and because you don't like the GM... What? Come on. I don't know. I'm not sure that I knocked that column out of the park the way I wanted to. And then I hear myself talking about it now, I'm more sure of that. I'm not sure I brought it.
I don't know if I agree so much with that part of it. I think it's more just overall career frustration that he hasn't been given as much help. For instance, the Packers haven't drafted a wide receiver in the first round since 2002. And the draft where Jordan Love was selected was, by all accounts, a very deep draft for wide receivers. The one guy, Claypool, that ended up with the Steelers was still on the board when the Packers picked Jordan Love, and he would have been a real nice addition to their team. As you mentioned in your piece, Davante Adams is certainly one of the best wide receivers in football, but the rest of the receiver core, other than the tight end, is pretty ordinary. And here's a number that always amazes me. Aaron Rodgers has thrown 4 touchdown passes to first-round picks in his 16-year career, and they've all gone to Mercedes Lewis, who was a first-round pick of the Jaguars 100 years ago. And that's amazing to me. 4 touchdown passes to first-round picks in 16 years. So, I maybe there is something to the fact that he and his agent are trying to get an extension out of this. I mean, I guess that the Packers tried to restructure to give themselves a little more room, but yeah. I think he wants a commitment a little longer than maybe they're willing to give. So, it's interesting how these stories unfold. This weekend we had Aaron Rodgers sightings in Green Bay. It's like Bigfoot stuff going on.
Right. One thing that I did see, and I kind of talked about this, but didn't really, just because of space reasons, I didn't actually use the quotes, but John Kuhn, a guy from our area, who played fullback and played with Rodgers for a long time and fullback in the Packers, he kind of suggested what you just said about the contractual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a kind of a lengthy quote where he thinks Rodgers has some ability to throw his weight around and get a little bit more contractual solidity or whatever, and that may be what's behind this. The other thing I want to point out is, according to most of the NFL, they really reached on Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
I don't know
that Jordan Love. I mean, Jordan Love is not like that. Was not like drafting Justin Fields.
Yeah,
I don't think. Was not like drafting this kid from Brigham Young. I don't think. So it does feel like it's not just that they did what they drafted positionally, but they seem to have reached in terms of the actual pick. It's not just that they drafted a quarterback; it's the quarterback they draft.
Yeah, it's and the other thing it's not like is when the Packers drafted Aaron Rodgers 24th in 2005, because that was the year a lot of people thought he was going to be the number one pick. And probably, and if you could redraft it today, he would be the number one pick.
He would be comparable to Justin Fields, I would say.
That's a pretty good assessment, I think. So if you want to read the tea leaves, and of course everybody tries to do that in a situation like this where the principal, i.e. Aaron Rodgers, has not spoken, do you think John Kuhn is not speaking without Aaron Rodgers' blessing on some level, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think that Rodgers is speaking through his proxies pretty well. That's what I've been at least semi-ascertaining from
that could certainly be. And John Kuhn at this point, retired, he doesn't care. So
yeah.
Why not stick up for your boy?
Yeah. So it will be an interesting situation. Well, it's funny because I was listening to, I don't know what podcast it was. It was the MMQB podcast, and I forget the three hosts, and they all said, okay, what team does Aaron Rodgers play for in week one of 2021? And all three of the hosts said the Green Bay Packers.
So, that's probably what I would say too.
Yeah. I mean, just as an aside, I mean, I think they had a kind of a down low kind of decent draft. That they did draft a receiver in the third round this year, a slot guy who a lot of people think is going to be a pretty good player, Amari Rodgers. So I think it will be interesting to see. I mean, to my way of thinking, if you keep knocking on the door, eventually it's going to open. And they've been in the NFC Championship four times in 7 years, and it hasn't opened yet. But, you know, I don't think they're far off.
Yeah, I don't think they are either. I like the football team, and I like Aaron Rodgers a lot.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, as I mentioned in my piece, it will make my Sundays a lot more drab if he's not playing.
And I can't believe they're not thinking about
that. I can't. They should phone me about these. They should definitely phone me about these decisions, that's for sure. So, with the other, before we came on, before we began today, you were starting to get fired up about something. So, you're mentioning about how you thought sports should open up more. So, if you're still fired up, and God knows I hope you are, go get him, big guy.
I think I'm surprised that they haven't.
Okay.
More, and I understand that, like in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you're allowed to have 50% of capacity at outdoor events and 25% at indoor events, mm-hmm. and the Philadelphia Pro teams are not even come close to that.
Yeah, that's true.
They're not, and we should point out. Because I'm sure anybody who's listening who's paying attention will point out that the city of Philadelphia has different standards than the state does.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually more stringent than the state, but I can't believe that it isn't more of an issue that the Phillies and the Sixers and the Flyers would want to work with the city and say, hey, why can't we put some more people, you know, social distancing and all that, and mm-hmm. wearing the mask. And the other thing is, on Memorial Day, it's going to, all of these restrictions on capacity limits of stadiums are going to go away. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard anything saying that we're going to see a full ballpark at a Phillies game or any of these games. It just seems strange to me. I was watching the golf yesterday, which was down in Charlotte, and Rory McIlroy won. And that was the first sports event that I've seen since the pandemic that really looked like
full capacity. Mm-hmm. When he was walking up the 18th hole, it was a mob scene. It was wall-to-wall people the way it used to always be on PGA Tour events. And McIlroy, who has really struggled, he, according to his own admission, and really kind of been in a slump, and he has said that walking around out there with no noise and no energy from the crowd has really affected him. Hmm. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in this first event that they're kind of back to capacity, he comes out and wins the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me kind of think of it. I wonder how far we are from seeing that. And everybody throughout this whole thing has been very critical of the governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, being so onerous with his restrictions and shutting down the economy. And I think it's ridiculously overstated.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have professional sports teams who don't even seem like they're. I mean, he's being more lenient than they are, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Strange.
It is strange. As an aside, I find it always interesting that athletes, when under normal conditions, they say they don't hear the negative stuff in the crowd. At the same time, when now that we have no fans, they're saying, boy, I really miss the fans and the enthusiasm. how do you square those two things, you know?
Yeah, and you know, now it's been a year. I mean, they must be almost used to it now, but of course they're not going to say that. Of course they're going to say, yeah, I really miss the fans, and I think a lot of them do really miss the,
well,
the fans.
Well,
it's a very genuine thing.
Yeah, I mean, how can it? How can it not be? If you're on your third and four nights, and it's February in Cleveland, how can the crowd not carry you through to some degree? I mean, it's like, how can it not give you something? You know, you feed off it somehow.
Even playing on the road, and people booing you, people yelling at you. I mean, that fires you up.
That's, yeah, anything at all.
Negative. Yeah.
Yeah. So. At any rate, hopefully we are moving closer to that day. I mean, we actually started down that path because I talked about Penn State having a virtual caravan where they have Zoom calls with their various coaches. And that is actually going to be June 1st to 3rd after the restrictions are lifted. So that is kind of a curious dynamic in and of itself, considering what a caravan is supposed to be.
Yeah, a caravan is really when these coaches go around the state and go to little banquet type dinners, and they speak and they sign autographs and they press the flesh, and that's really the purpose of a caravan, as far as I can see. I can't really see any other purpose. It's about making it's about PR, and it's about schmoozing with donors, and mm-hmm. and I mean, I don't even see how you could effectively do that virtually. There's going to be Zoom calls with us as a part of that, but there's Zoom calls with us anyway. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird. You know, if you're going to have a Zoom call with, like the women's soccer coach, I mean, is anybody even going to be on that Zoom call? I don't know.
Maybe that could be a little strange.
Yeah, I don't know. So... But anyway, they're having that, it's just another Zoom interview for us. I'm not sure what it accomplishes beyond that, but you know, I mean, they know better. I hope they know better than I do.
I guess we'll find out, right?
Yeah, we'll find out. And again, you know, I would say roughly a month from now.
Yeah.
Going back to this big picture thing about post-pandemic, I think roughly for a month from now, I would think we'd be starting to see 30,000 people in baseball stadiums again.
I hope so.
And then 10,000 people in basketball arenas when the playoffs start. I hope so, and it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, if Tim Tebow being an NFL tight end, if that doesn't put people in seats.
Well, what we will be seeing by then, Mike, is we will see both of us in the same place at the same time doing that's after right. the buzzer.
That's right. That what a harbinger of better things to come.
No doubt of that. So we will leave that positive note in the minds of all our listeners.
Awesome.
And we will talk to you again soon. I'm Gordy Jones, and that's Mike Gross.
See you later.